Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Not bad, thank you. I've just been, well, this morning I was watching Livingston and Roy nail it round the ground. Good to see both of them get runs for the Perth Scorchers, especially Livingston, obviously, with me being a Lancashire fan. It's always good to see. But yeah, just really, nothing really much to do, I guess, here in the UK right now. So yeah, I've just been kind of doing nothing.
Yeah, that's probably quite relatable to some people. But yeah, that match in the Big Bash was brilliant, wasn't it? Livingston and Roy, believe it, 119 run partnership from 14 overs. Absolutely brilliant. But yeah, Joe, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well, of course, during these times. And also joining us on the County Cricket Podcast today is former Surrey and Derbyshire left-arm spinner, Nayan Doshi. So Nayan, first things first, thank you very much for coming on to our podcast today, mate. How's your day been so far?
Good. Thank you guys for having me. You know, really appreciated. Yeah, day's been good. I guess like everyone else, not a lot to do. Try and keep yourself occupied and try and be as productive as you can, really. I think that's, you know, we can all use this time to sort of catch up on things and better ourselves as people, or, you know, just find stuff productive to do, which, you know, once things do open, it can be easier.
Yeah, I mean, sound piece of advice, I suppose, for all the listeners out there as well. But yes, talking of today's podcast then, just for the listeners at home. So we're going to start by talking to Nayan about his county cricket career. Then we're going to talk a bit about how we think county cricket could improve heading into the future. And then today, instead of teammates, which is our usual concluding segment, we've got some quickfire questions for Nayan. So Nayan, we're not going to reveal anything about those yet, but bear that in mind as the podcast progresses. So to begin today's podcast then, Nayan, let's go right to the beginning, the origin of your cricketing journey then. What were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
My first memories were basically my dad watching lots of stuff with him, having a lot of friends come over, you know, his teammates, his friends who we played with a lot and everything as well. So, you know, that was always quite exciting as a young kid. My first introduction to cricket was when I was around 7 and I ended up playing for Middlesex under-11s, which was quite nice. I was much smaller than everyone else. But it was exciting. And then, you know, just watching my dad, watching people, well, spending a lot of time and watching videos of my dad's heroes and, you know, his favourite players like Sir Vivian Richards, Sir Garfield Sobers. I then actually, they became my cricket heroes as well, you know, and I did try to emulate them, but I think it was easier being a left-arm spinner to emulate my dad. Mm. So, you know, I wasn't quite Sir Vivian or Sir Garfield. I try to get as close to my dad as possible. That's also very tough, but yeah, that was it, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Some fantastic idols there. And of course, your dad. We just have to touch upon your dad, Nayan, because for me as a Warwickshire fan, and for any of the listeners out there who are older Warwickshire fans per se, he was a member of one of, well, I'd say a very, very famous Warwickshire side in 1980. In 1979, in the old Sunday League, Warwickshire finished rock bottom. So we finished with Gordon Spoon. And then in 1980, your dad came in, Nayan, and completely changed everything, alongside John Snow as well, the former England.
Yes. But dad fondly refers to him as Snowy.
But yeah, it was an incredible, incredible season. So from finishing bottom, Warwickshire in 1980 completely turned everything around and went on to actually win the John Player Sunday League with Nayan's father taking 21 wickets. Gladstone Small, a man who I've had the pleasure of meeting, took 25 wickets.
Fantastic gentleman. Fantastic gentleman.
100%. Lovely, lovely bloke, Gladstone. And then Anton Ferreira, the late great Bob Willis and John Snow. What a team that was.
Not bad, is it? Not bad. Not bad at all. No, they were a fantastic team and, you know, it is top company to be in.
Definitely. And just talking of your dad, Nayan, how much of an influence was he in terms of developing you as a cricketer? You said there that you'd watch him and almost try and emulate your dad. But what did he do in terms of specifics? Did he have, I don't know, maybe specific drills for you to do or specific, I don't know, lessons that he taught you throughout your early cricketing days?
Well, to be honest, my dad never actually interfered in my career, never actually coached me at all. Like, he just, I used to bowl a lot, just, you know, to him when I was a kid. And I guess he just saw something that, okay, I can bowl. And he actually didn't tell me anything. And he just let me be, because he's of that thing that he likes everything to be as natural as possible. And then you fine tune, you know. So he kind of just let me be, and I would just bowl, and I used to love to bowl. And I just basically, it's one of these weird things, because I would see his action and I thought he had, I'm not saying it because he's my dad, but I thought genuinely it's the best left arm spinner's action I've ever seen. It's so smooth, and he spun it at very good pace that I just thought I should try and copy that. Also, being my dad, is like, okay, got to be like my dad. But yeah, that was my dad's influence in the game. But I do wish, thinking back in it, that I had got him involved in my cricket more, because I think it would have helped me a lot more than it did, you know. But I didn't involve him as much as I should have.
Interesting assessment there. And yes, I have to agree about your dad's action. Another spinner I have to mention, Indian spinner, yes. Ishan Singh Bedi. Yes. What an action that was.
Yeah, they were all pretty good, weren't they?
Yeah, brilliant.
They were all pretty good.
Smooth as silk.
Yeah, yeah. That was exactly. Poetry in motion.
Great way of describing it. And of course, for the listeners out there who don't know already, all three of us are spinners. So this may be very spin heavy today. But yes,
not a problem.
In full
spin
force.
Rules the world.
Exactly.
Spin to win, don't you? You spin to win.
Spin it to win it, exactly. Seam it to win it doesn't sound as good or sweet.
No, it doesn't quite work,
does
it?
Sound as good. Spin it to win it. It's you know, it's cool.
It works perfectly. And we've just mentioned there, of course, about your almost spin history almost now. And how would you describe yourself as a spinner?
How would I describe myself as a spinner? I am going to be totally honest. I know everyone says they're going to be totally honest, but I'm really going to be totally honest. that when I started playing pro cricket, I was at my best. I felt that I was bowling very good pace. I was totally natural. I had exactly what I wanted from myself. I was free flowing. I was fearless. And then I sort of didn't back myself when I was actually should have backed myself, because if I'm honest with myself at that time, I felt that, okay, I'm going to play for England. And right now I'm the number one spinner in the country. That's how I felt at that stage of my career. But then I was my own worst enemy, where I stopped backing myself and I was running after other people's opinions and trying to do the right things for them and just to do the right things rather than just sticking to what I know and enjoying the ride. You know, I kind of tried to get brownie points for no reason. And that actually ruined my bowling, and I didn't fulfill my career. So I would say, me as a spinner, that yes, I have had a good career. I've also been stricken by injury. You know, I've had two shoulder ops. So I guess that didn't help. But yeah, I guess I'm the spinner who just tries to spin the ball and trying to find ways to get the batsman out. You know, that's just the way I think.
Fair enough. And if you had to pick a delivery, let's say that's your favourite delivery to bowl, what would you pick?
I think a left-arm spinner's or a leg spinner's dream ball is to pitch a middle stump and draw the batsman forward and take the edge. Yeah. I think, you know, genuinely getting them forward. Or if you're an off-spinner, you're coming around the wicket to a left-hander, you know, drifts in, pitches in middle, you know, batsman plays forward and takes the edge. And just the look in the batsman's face when you know that you've done him is one of the most satisfying things you can ever find, like you can ever feel. It's an amazing satisfaction.
Yeah. I mean, personally for me, that's definitely something that's good to watch. It's like quite, especially in red ball cricket for me as well, it's quite a satisfying mode of dismissal, if you like. I definitely agree with that. Yeah. Aaron, would you agree with that as well?
Obviously, I'm going to say that I'm a spinner myself.
Very true.
I'm not going to say, oh, no, don't like that, Joe.
From a fan's perspective, though, is there a more satisfying delivery to watch?
I tell you one, which I do like, and I suppose I wouldn't say it's newer per se, but I think it's one which is more widely bowled nowadays, is the Karen ball. And in particular against right-handers, because it just drifts in and straightens. And if the batsman doesn't pick it, oh, it just looks like an absolute jaffer every single time. It's one which you want to replay as a fan and watch over and over and over again. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I agree with that as well. They're all brilliant. What you said about the cannonball, it's perfect because, you know, they play in it, you know, when it hits that back leg, the guy's playing for a little bit of spin and it's hit the back leg. And it's like, I've just done you there. Yeah, you're definitely right.
Yeah, to be honest, no matter how you get a wicket, as long as it says a wicket next to your name, then you take them, don't you? Small victories, you take them.
Oh, yeah. Well, 100%. I mean, I've gotten loads of wickets with bad balls. Yeah. And anyone who said they hasn't is not being honest. I'm not. Yeah. You know, you bowl a jaffer and you won't get a wicket necessarily. You know, you get the satisfaction, but like what you said, you can bowl a ball which is not quite up to how you want it to be, but it gets you a wicket, and then that sets you and your spell for the next 10 to 15 overs or how many ever overs you're going to go, you know, because like you said, it says wicket in your name.
Yeah, no one can take that away from you.
Exactly.
It's there forever, etched into history.
Exactly.
Let's move on now to talk about your county cricket career. So what were some of your first memories of county cricket?
My first memory, I would say, was driving up to Gloucester, where I made my debut, and driving up with the lovely Azam Mahmood, who is, you know, a fantastic influence. And, you know, just, of course, at that time, he was one of the best all-rounders in the world. And, I drove up with him. He was driving me, and he was just super cool. And Azam just made me feel extremely relaxed on my debut, where I got to a stage where I forgot I was playing the next day. Yeah. And that was just really nice. And to be honest, it didn't even look like he was trying. He was just being himself, because he's such an amazing man. He was just kind of being himself and just kind of talking about things, explaining. And then he said, listen, just enjoy the game. What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to bowl badly. Okay. You'll get another chance, whatever, you know, and that was amazing. Just, you know, coming from him.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool place to be, I guess, really. Like a cool moment. Obviously something that you remembered for a long time and sort of held close to you almost for a long time.
Yeah, it did. It did. You know, and as a human being, you can always feel when someone is genuine. Mm. You know, because a lot of people say the right things, but our instinct will always tell us when something is genuine.
Yeah.
You know, and you could see that from Azza, it was really genuine. Because he was really a true team man, apart from being an outstanding cricketer. Sometimes even he did freakish things, but he was genuinely a fantastic and is still a fantastic human being.
Yeah, I think anyone who's seen Azhar play, of course, he was a wonderful player. I remember watching him towards the latter stage of his career, but he was still one heck of an all-rounder. He really was wonderful, wonderful player. But you mentioned there about your debut then, Nyan. What do you actually remember from that day? Because you obviously went to Bristol. That was in the 2004 County Championship. What do you remember from that day for Surrey?
I remember it was quite funny. Steve Rickson said, right, you're going to be the night watchman. And I was like, all right. I was like, okay, fine. And they had at that time, I think it was Shabir Ahmed who played for Pakistan. He was bowling quite quickly. So I remember that, and instantly when he goes, you're going to be night watchman, I immediately just remember going, so I'm probably going to be facing about 7 overs of Shabir Ahmed. Nice. It's exactly what I want. That was the first thing. And the other thing, everyone in the dressing room was supremely relaxed. You know, you're surrounded by probably the top players, you know, especially the Surrey batting lineup. And even the bowlers, to be honest, you had literally a world-class 11. And at that stage, I was an absolute novice making my debut. So it actually kind of relaxed me even more, because you didn't have any guys who were like, oh, he's kind of good, but, you know, he's still trying to make it. No, all these guys in the 11 were
class players.
Absolutely top guns. So you're like, okay, literally. It actually was weird, because I felt less pressured, because like, well, okay, this is actually quite cool, because these guys have, you know, been there, done that, and they're at literally on top of their game. Great. They're only going to encourage someone like me. you know. So that was really good that I was out of reach of competition for them at that stage. Do you know what I mean? I was like,
yeah,
nowhere near anyone. So it was kind of nice because everyone really looked after me. You know, Ram Prakash, who's a really dear friend, and, you know, I think he'd be up there in my top five batters I've ever seen. You know, and you had, you know, John Batty at that stage, who was my captain, who was a fantastic captain. Me and Bats worked fantastically together. You had Bickers, again, lovely bloke, what a bowler. You know, you had Jimmy Ormond at that time, who was similar my age, but he was a lot more experienced, you know, just also played for England at that time and was a top performer. It was just an amazing team. You had Alistair Brown. You just had a great team. Yeah, you had Adam Holyoake.
Saclane as well, didn't you? Saclane was Shaq.
Saki didn't play because he was injured.
No, it was he was in that team though, wasn't he, originally?
Yes, and then he got injured.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
so yeah, and you had Thorpe as well. So what have I got to lose? Nothing. All right. Yeah. And I just enjoyed it. And they literally made me feel relaxed. I remember after I bowled my first ball, I think it was Rampy who just said, right, okay, that's you for the day, then settle in all day. And that just kind of made me relax because I felt, okay, they're appreciating the ball I've just bowled. Okay, great, go. And it was all genuine. And you guys know, having also playing cricket, that you know when people are genuinely saying, well bowled, and when they mean it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
I bet it was, because that Surrey team of the early 2000s, they were almost like the Galacticos, weren't they, in terms of just names and presence in that team. And there's some incredible names in there, some of the finest county cricketers in the past 20 years or so.
I think a lot of the guys were probably some of the best players in the world who I played with at that time. But again, they didn't get the recognition. I don't know why. You know, I'm just going to divert for 1 second, guys. Sorry. For example, you had Alistair Brown. Now, he was the first person in world cricket to get two double hundreds in white ball cricket. But he's not mentioned.
No.
So, but this is what I mean. Like, they talk about, I have not seen a more destructive domestic batsman than Alistair Brown. I've not seen one. He was the best. It was unbelievable. I mean, it's just, but he's not mentioned. He got a raw deal. He got 100 against India, good bowling attack. I think he played 3 games after that and got dropped. Is that fair treatment for someone who's, I mean, if he played now, he would be one of the most destructive batsmen in world cricket if he got given the right chance. Because I've seen him against some world-class bowling and he was a freak.
I've been told that by some certain Surrey fans, to be fair. They always said when they're in the crowd, he was someone who you always almost look to almost provide the fireworks. Yeah. Just a wonderful batsman. I agree. Destructive is a fantastic adjective for Alistair Brown.
He literally
just dispatched people.
Oh my God. Oh, it was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous, you know, and absolutely fearless. It was unbelievable, you know. And I reckon a lot of those guys, if they got the sort of backing what these guys have done in the last 10 years, a lot of these guys would have played a lot of international cricket.
Yeah. Even guys like Mark Ramprakash didn't probably play as much international cricket as he deserved at all. And if you think about the weight of runs he got in county cricket, it's just remarkable. And obviously he's, you know, taking a foray into coaching now, and like that's a different route from him since retirement. And some of the wisdom that he will bring to players, having played not only for international cricket but also county cricket for years, it's crazy how he did not get more England opportunities.
Well, look, he played 52 tests. I think he had about 8 to 9 comebacks, which was ridiculous. He batted everywhere from 1 to 7. And the same goes for Hickey.
Yeah.
It's the same for him. If some of those players were handled properly, I feel, like they are now, the management is a lot softer, it's a lot caring, you know, because when you have outstanding talent like that, you need to know how to take care of them.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and they were head and shoulders above everyone else. Even to be honest, on a scale, like the way John Crawley played spin, he was a fantastic player of spin. Yeah. But again, different management. You know, there were a lot of guys there who, you know, I keep saying Alistair Brown as well. They were guys there who did not get probably the sort of backing they should have done, like the guys do now. You know, it's become a lot easier in that sense.
I suppose
there's more compassion.
I suppose the one thing that we could say about that, though, is that at least we've started to learn from that, though. In terms of with our young players, we're giving them a lot more ample opportunity, I suppose, now. And that is producing even better talent, I suppose, on the international stage.
And also franchise cricket as well. I mean, we'll touch a little bit on that later. But, you know, franchise cricket is also helping younger players. Look at Dan Lawrence. He's just played Big Bash cricket for the Brisbane Heat. He's now potentially going to make his test debut on Thursday for England. Like, obviously, it's a different format and things like that. But, you know, it sort of it all carries over and it's all international recognition. And yeah, I guess that's one of the major differences for me between sort of now and then.
Well, that's it. We're being braver, aren't we? At the end of the day, we're being braver. We're kind of being how you would see, for example, guys get picked in India or Sri Lanka or Pakistan or the West Indies. You know, they see talent. They see, okay, this guy's made some runs, but man, I really back this guy. He's talented. Throw him in. You know, we're now being brave.
Yeah.
You know, where before it was like, okay, let him have five seasons and let him prove. No, look, some guy's good and you see the promise and you believe, okay, he might fail. He might get dropped. Because, you know, that's not in anyone's control. But the fact is, at least now you're backing your players and we're being a bit braver. And that's good.
Yeah, of course. And it's beginning to pay off, which is, even more important across formats. Exactly. But now, just bringing the conversation back on track to yourself then, because we've spoken there about your debut season for Surrey. And in that debut season, that was only the second ever season, really, of T20 cricket. Of course, in 2003, Surrey had won the T20 Cup against my county of Warwickshire, of course. But in terms of those, well, there's no need to apologise. It's cricket, isn't it? But just talking of that season in 2004, how did you actually approach T20 cricket? Because it was this new concept, this exciting new idea. No one really knew how to approach it back then in comparison to nowadays. But how did you personally adapt your bowling to T20 cricket while it was in its infancy?
Now, I'm sure you guys will have done this. We all played 20-over cricket as a kid, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's how we all started playing cricket. And that's, for some reason, it just felt very easy because that's what we did as kids. We played sometimes on the weekends two 20-20 matches, you know. And that's, for me, that's what made me find a lot of ease in it, I guess. I felt very comfortable in it. Also, it was only bowling four overs. So as a spinner, you're thinking, four overs? That's nothing. It's like, you know, you think in a championship cricket where you end up sometimes bowling 40 overs. This is four overs. You kind of know that the batsmen are going to try and whack you. And for me, I always try to basically just say, okay, try to keep the ball out the batsman's arc and try to spin it past him and just see what he's doing and try to dictate terms. Because I never tried to bowl dot balls, because the minute you try and bowl in that sense defensively, you get whacked. If you try and control as a bowler what is going to happen, that is your best chance. And then whatever, because I've always had analysts tell me, okay, this batsman does this. This is how you should prepare. And I'm not going to swear on podcast, of course, but I've just basically said, no. They said, why? I said, because I need to bowl to my strengths. So what are my strengths? Trying to beat people in the flight, spinning the ball and bowling the straight on ball. And, you know, so, okay, so let's try and dictate terms. Let's try and set a field to make it as uncomfortable for him to get on top of you and still try to get him out. You know, you got to bowl to your strengths, not the batsman's weaknesses. That's only my opinion on how I did it, which worked for me.
Yeah. And I guess everyone has different ways of going about it, don't they?
Yeah. I always feel like as bowlers, and especially as spinners at that stage, where you kind of just think, all right, spinners are there to be hit, but no, we're not. We're actually, we control the game. because of where we bowl, we control the game.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you ever feel either now, you know, more of a spectator, if you like, or then when you were playing, do you ever feel the game has been almost unfairly weighted towards batters? Because in T20 cricket, they like, obviously, it draws crowds in, right? And sixes are going to draw crowds in and things like that. Do you ever think that's been the case or not at all?
I do. I think it's. I think the boundaries have become slightly smaller. Personally, I like bowling with a harder ball because I look at it, you get more perches, but a lot of spinners don't. They like bowling with a softer ball, which is, again, fine. But bowl, for the batters, it's a lot easier. And I do feel it has become a lot more batsman-friendly in some respects. I wouldn't say the batting has become any better, but in some ways, I mean, we had guys like Andrew Simons and all these guys, you know, playing for Lancs at that time, and you're not really getting more of a destructive batter than Simo and some of the other guys. Some of the fielders, again, were outstanding. So I don't think batsmen have become better. It's become a little more batsman-friendly, like the boundaries and other things. But I think the public is also kind of realising that sometimes when a team gets 140, 150, and it becomes a very tight game, they actually enjoy that. Yeah. And I think a lot of the people kind of see them, who don't even understand cricket so much, the battle between bat and ball.
Yeah.
You know, rather than 190 plays 210.
Yeah. I guess it's, I don't know, because, I mean, we've definitely had a conversation about this on the podcast before, Aaron, probably a couple of times, about whether we believe it's more, most unfairly weighted. And I know there's certain pundits who've come out with ideas and maybe how to change that. Shane Warne being like the main guy. What about Niam? Would you be in favour of maybe increasing the amount of overs to 5 overs per bowler? Therefore, meaning let's say for England, Jofra Archer can therefore bowl an extra over, then that obviously takes away one less from maybe a part timer. Are you in favour of that, or again?
100%, because there's no limit on the batsman batting balls, is there? Or where he can bat or anything, or the weight of his bat or anything. I mean, again, weight of his bat is a totally separate subject, but I'm just saying, you know, to be honest, I don't feel there should be so many restrictions on bowlers. Having catches is a little bit ridiculous as well, because, for example, you might not have a catcher at slip or, you know, somewhere short. A batsman might you might have someone in the catching position, but at 40 yards, because the guy plays that sort of pull shot, or he drives over extra cover like that. And you actually might place him there, but you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah. I guess that's kind of the argument almost with fly slip, in a way. Is that it's kind of no man's land, effectively, fly slip. Obviously, it's not slip and it's not kind of third man region. But I guess it's that kind of argument, really.
But again, this is also the umpires and the people using their cricket brain going, all right, he's bowling short. There's a fly slip there. So clearly he's trying to basically get him out like that. You know, he's not having a fly slip there and saying, all right, I'm bowling you now, half volleys. So, but do you know what I mean? So there also has to be a little bit of thinking going into the game. You know, and I agree with you guys, and Warnie, of course, as well, that there shouldn't be so much restrictions on the best bowlers. Because all the batsmen do is, if Jofra has 4 overs, all right, 4 overs are gone, now we've got 16 overs to do what we want.
Yeah.
So all they have to do is wait him out, or whoever the strike bowler is for the team.
Even if they just take, you know, 6 runs and over off him, and they might get a lucky boundary.
And they might get 9 per over of the other bowlers, which is not difficult anymore with the boundaries and everything. It's not so difficult.
Yeah, it's a very interesting debate, without a doubt. And as I say, something me and Aaron have discussed on podcasts before. So, yeah, it's without doubt interesting.
Yeah, so for the listeners at home, of course, you can tell we're all spinners, can't you? By the way in which we're talking about this, and not batsmen.
No.
Yeah, we couldn't really make it any more obvious. But Nine, again, just coming back onto your Surrey days, I suppose we just have to talk almost about the way it ended, really, because I just wanted to know your thoughts personally, because for those who don't know as well, Nine, you were the first person in T20 cricket to reach 50 wickets, of course. That's history in itself.
Yeah.
But how disappointed were you in the way in which it ended at Surrey? Because Surrey brought in Chris Schofield, a leg spinner who, of course, played for England in the 2000s. Yeah. Did you almost feel I don't know, displaced in that team. Did you feel any animosity towards Surrey for doing that, or did you just think it was part and parcel of the game?
It's part and parcel of the game. I felt that I was not being given my dues after having performed out of my skin in all formats for the club, you know, and I didn't see eye to eye with the management regarding that. And I decided to leave my contract. I decided to leave because I felt I was not getting my deserved respect, you know, after I had single-handedly won a lot of games for the club in very, very difficult circumstances, you know, in all forms of the game. And I was averaging at that time just around 30 in championship cricket, bowling at the Oval. And if you check other people's averages, this is before my shoulder got really bad, before I started having the ops. The other spinners who used to come at Surrey were averaging nearly 50, including international spinners. But bowling at the Oval, at that stage, I was averaging literally about 30. And in other places, I were averaging about 26. So in the 2006 season, I think I ended up averaging 26. And I'd taken, I think, 52 wickets in 12 games. Or 54, I can't remember. And then, you know, the next year, okay, I'm not saying Scoey's good and he did well. I also felt that I should have been part of the World Cup squad and I should have been in the 15 for the World Cup in South Africa, which I wasn't, you know. And I wasn't picked. I wasn't even the probables list and I didn't find that justice in that sense. And, you know, I decided to leave. And I left my contract 2 years early.
I mean, looking back on that, though, yeah. Nyan, not to say that you regret that, but you kind of wish things panned out a bit different with Surrey because you were an excellent spinner for them. I haven't even mentioned the fact that for two seasons in a row, you were the leading wicket taker in the entire T20 Cup. I mean, you were a serious performer for Surrey in those four seasons. But you almost wish that it would have just ended, I don't know, a bit smoother per se.
Of course, because I do love the club and I love the club to this day, you know. I just didn't see eye to eye with the management at that time and that was it. But yeah, you know, and they have their reasons. I have mine. I didn't try to be very public about the reasons. I just said I left because I wanted to leave. And this is actually the first time I'm speaking about this, you know, because if you see all the articles, I've not said anything. It just everything just says Doshi quit Surrey, Doshi leave Surrey. And that's it. So I've not said why I left, but yeah, that's why I left. Do you wish in hindsight? Of course. I wish things ended better, but it didn't. I made a lot of very good friends there. You know, personal friends. You have your cricket friends, but I made friends, you know, which outside cricket, I'm still very close to this day, you know, it's like family friends, you know, and I was very lucky with that. I feel Surrey being such a big club, I felt they were always kind of looking for something bigger and better. So no matter how well I did, they still might look at an overseas spinner and something like that, you know. Yeah. And that also is just the way the club's nature is, you know. So, and I sometimes don't think that was justified, but you know, it's up to the club, but if it doesn't suit me, then I've got to nip it in the bud. But yes, I do wish things had ended better, but you know, they didn't. I wish they had been a little more supportive, but they were not, and no hard feelings.
Well, yeah, that's why I wanted to ask about that, really, because you mentioned about the articles. I mean, there are quite a few articles online, and it was something that I was just intrigued by, because I mean, if this was someone from one of our counties, per se, in the modern game, who had been our leading wicket taker, let's say, for example, with my county of Warwickshire, and it was someone like an Ollie Stone, for example, who was leading our bowling attack and doing so well across formats, and then it all just suddenly comes to an end, and then he goes on loan to another team and then moves to Derbyshire the season after. I was just really intrigued by that, and I'm glad that you have actually, well, opened up on it a bit, to be honest. I'd say I'm glad that that's answered the question. And I did just also want to ask a bit about your small loan spell to Warwickshire. How did that come about?
That was hilarious. That was very funny. First thing about the Surrey thing you said, right? Look, it's, I don't know. I, I, I didn't say anything. It was written. I left. And I mean, look, even the great Viv Richards said about me, who's one of my idols, said, like, for the 2007 World Cup, why aren't I in it? He's done so well. Why have you picked someone who's barely done anything? But okay, that's a different conversation. But you were saying about the Warwickshire spell. Well, after I'd left, my contract had been cancelled. I'd left. I spoke to Mark Greatbatch at the time at Warwickshire. He was really good. Darren Maddy was there as well, so everything was lovely. They were really good. They said, yep, ready to sign you. 2 years, lovely. But, and I was signed, but Surrey, I was meant to play Sussex at Hove. Already everything, I think the great Sangakkara was our captain at that time. And it was very interesting because Surrey didn't give an official written letter that I could play for another county. So I needed an NOC from Surrey, which they sent. Then we tried to speak to them. And they said, well, no, we verbally say yes, but we can't give you written confirmation. And I said, guys, you know I need written confirmation. Well, sorry, we can't do that for you. So basically, I didn't get to play after I left Surrey that season, which is one thing I will say I find a little bit petty from the club, because I've left, okay, they could have signed that and I would have played that season. But I think from July onwards, I couldn't play a game because Surrey wouldn't put it in writing. And that's one thing I find a little bit small from a very big club, if I'm honest.
I think that's quite disappointing to hear, really.
Yeah, they didn't give you the clearance.
In a just in a cricketing sense, yeah.
And from a Warwickshire perspective.
Yeah.
Warwickshire was amazing because my dad played for Warwickshire. And it was very nice because a lot of, oh my God, I remember your dad and this, oh, now you're here. And it was very nice. It was really nice, you know. So, but yeah, it was one of these things. The chairman at that time of the club didn't give me the written consent. You know, I would say, I don't mince my words, a little bit petty. But okay, that's up to them. You know, I have great respect for Alex Stewart. He's always supported me. Stewie had nothing to do with it, by the way. Stewie was always a fantastic mentor, someone who I could always take advice off, even to this day. There's a reason why he's called the gaffer, because he's amazing, you know, and the utmost respect for him, and the true professional and a true gentleman and very honest and straightforward.
Mm. You know. And a pretty decent cricketer as well.
Yeah.
Again, he's one of probably the greatest all-rounders we've ever produced, but no one puts him in an all-rounders category. But you know, you put Stokes in there and people like that. Well, I would say Alex Stewart is way above that, because, you know, he's averaging 41 and keeping wicket and opening the batting. It's not easy, is it?
It's not easy to keep wicket and then straight away open the batting twice in a test match. It's not easy at all. No, it is not.
But yeah, that was the whole Surrey thing. So yeah, I'm happy actually I got to say that on air because I've never said it.
Well, there you go. And of course, that is, well, I suppose closure for some Surrey fans too. Who wanted to know, really? I mean, I certainly wanted to know, because it was very intriguing to me. And just before we go on to just almost a summary of your entire county career, I did just want to touch upon, obviously, the spell at Derbyshire as well, because that was in 2008. Again, you didn't do too badly, to be honest, at Derbyshire. 10 games, 8 wickets. Just looking at the economy rate as well, 5.88, not bad in T20 cricket. But why did that spell come to an end in 2008? What was the reason behind that, per se?
Again, it was something, it was more of a management thing. And again, everyone was nice, but if you notice, quite a few players left that year. After I left, Ricky Clark, who's a very, very dear friend, you know, he left. I think Wavell Hind left, and I think Shaul Langerfeld left as well, and one or two other guys. So I think a few people left, well, near enough after me, just because management things. And otherwise, the club was fantastic. The players, amazing set of lads, very hardworking. Some actually very, very good cricketers in that team, you know. But just it just didn't click, you know. And I actually really enjoyed my time at Derby. I really did enjoy it. I really did enjoy it, you know. I think at that stage, my shoulder was starting to hurt bowling in Championship cricket. That's a time where it was getting a bit worse, you know. I couldn't bowl long spells. I was, after about 12, 14 overs, I would start tiring, aching. And I think my championship form went off a bit as well. But I was a little bit stubborn to sort of admit that, you know. My ego said, no, I can still do it. But, you know, I got dropped from the championship squad because of that. I was still in all the white ball stuff, but I just dropped from the championship squad because really my shoulder was not holding out so much. But I was doing really well in the white ball stuff, you know, in 50 overs, 40 overs and the T20 stuff.
Yeah. Again, that must have been pretty disappointing for you because, well, I mean, arguably your legacy, one of your legacies at Surrey was built on red ball cricket and your red ball ability. And then to find out for yourself that you couldn't actually bowl for long periods of time in red ball cricket, that must have been pretty disappointing. So almost
well, it did, yeah.
Find out.
Yeah, it was. And of course, at that time when, you know, a few people told me, look, why don't you just stick to white ball cricket? I took it as a real insult. Like, how dare you say that? You know, but to be honest, they were right because I couldn't bowl long spells. I would then lose pace, lose, you know, potency. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I
guess. And to be honest, end of 2007, 8, that's when I had my op. So I was still recovering from that. And then I had another op in 2010. So, yeah. You know, I had two massive shoulder ops in 2 years.
Yeah. It's pretty close, obviously close amount of time. Looking back on that now, though, do you ever feel like maybe if you'd taken that decision earlier, almost to stop playing red ball cricket earlier, do you ever feel like your county career could have been, you know, a bit longer, lasted a bit longer?
I feel yes. I also feel that I was a little bit impatient with a few things. You know, again, I'm very, very honest. You know, I just say it how it is. I do feel that I should have been more patient.
Yeah.
I was always, in some ways, disappointed not to be in an England squad regarding white ball cricket. And I didn't like that. But again, there's always guys like that. Always you're the one who feels the most that you deserve a chance, you know, because you will always be biased towards yourself. It's just human nature. So I did feel that. But I think it is a decision I should have made really in 2008.
Yeah.
Saying, you know what? And actually there were quite a lot of clubs saying, just play all white ball cricket for us. And we'd love that. And to be honest, that would have been basically the time where at that time there were a couple of franchises when the IPL had just started in 2008 that they wanted me to play as the overseas.
I guess certain things can open more doors really. And looking back on that, you know, when one door shuts, another one opens. And
yeah,
I guess that's just, I guess that's just life really, is almost looking back and realizing maybe you didn't make the right decision or regretting decisions or sometimes thinking you made the right decision. I guess that's just life in general. So
exactly.
Yeah. So let's talk about your county career as a whole now. So we may have already covered this a little bit. But what would you say your toughest moment of your county career was?
Leaving Surrey.
Yeah, as I said, I think we've basically covered that. I think that's fair enough.
Leaving Surrey would have been the toughest decision.
Yeah.
I was going to say 9. I must admit, I do actually quite respect the fact that you still have a lot of, well, I suppose, admiration for the club, even after that. I mean, you speak so positively about them. I was watching an interview that you did on a YouTube channel the other day.
Yep.
And you still speak very glowingly, and obviously Surrey left its imprint on you, it left its mark, and I suppose, obviously still a club that's very close and dear to your heart, I suppose.
Well, look, it is. I mean, look, for me, a cricket club, whether it's an international 11 or whether it's a club 11 or whether it's a county 11, an IPL, whatever sort of club it is in any standards, it's all about the players. The admins and the CEOs, they're great, right? The marketing department, everyone, they're all great. But I loved all the players at Surrey because they were fantastic, each and every one of them. And I'm still in touch with a lot of them. That's why I speak very fondly. management, CEOs, everything. To be honest, that's not the club. Yes, okay, they're in powerful positions. They make decisions. They do everything. But it's always, people forget, it's the players who make the club. And for me, the guys who I played with at Surrey were fantastic. And a lot of them are very, very, very dear friends. And some of them are still very good acquaintances and friends who we get along extremely well, because you can't be friends with everyone. You know, it's not the question of the bad people. Sometimes you just don't click. But all in all, fantastic bunch of lads, you know. But, you know, management, I thought Alan Butcher was very good. I never had an issue with Butch. But, you know, you have other management areas and everything, and just really didn't work too well with me. And that was it. So, yeah, that's why I speak so fondly.
Well, I suppose for Surrey fans listening to this, of course, that's going to be something to put a smile on their face. And yeah, I have to agree as well, because in any sport really, and I suppose in cricket as well, players are almost the priceless commodity. They're almost the lifeblood, aren't they? They're the thing that draws everything else in. Players are almost the foundation of a club in many, many ways.
It's players, and just one point I want to touch on. It's players and the people I respect also, along with the players, coaches, of course. Like Jeff Arnold was outstanding with me. Jeff Arnold was, you know, one in a million. Fantastic human being, great knowledge, and always been a really big supporter of mine. And I'm always thankful to him for that till this day. But and the physios. And I feel that the physios are also the real unsung heroes in not only cricket, in all professional sport, because they're the guys who tolerate a lot of our rubbish as players, and they're the guys who have a thankless job of just keeping us fit, you know, and hats off to them. And I've always said that I feel players and the top physios should be on the same pay scale. And I do feel that physios are underpaid, just because they're the guys who keep us fit in the park. And a lot of top players wouldn't have their careers if it wasn't for not having top-notch physios. I do believe that.
Will make you,
I guess,
popular amongst any physiotherapists.
It will.
There as well.
It will.
I'm just being honest with you guys, because really people don't, you know, they don't appreciate what a physio does. They're golden.
Mm. Yeah. So let's kind of flip the question on its head there now. What would you say your proudest moment of your county career has been?
Oof. I think it was really nice winning the championship in 2006. I think that was really nice. A really good team effort, you know. It was amazing, and you know, we had the great Anil Kumble that year as well, so that helped a bit.
And it did.
Yeah, but he only played a few games because he had to then leave, you know. But yeah, it was amazing having him, just like ridiculous, especially, you can understand, from a spinner's angle. But, you know, even not even that, just as a human being and how he goes about his stuff. You know, it's just unbelievable. Never seen anything like it. But, yeah, that was 2006, I think, winning the championship was great. I really did enjoy that. Team effort, atmosphere was amazing. It was great, 100%.
Yeah. You can't knock that answer there.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably every, you know, like, everyone who plays county cricket, that's the dream, isn't it? That's the ultimate goal. Yeah. It's all good to win, you know, T20 titles and 50 over titles and whatever. But ultimately, the ultimate prize is the county championship. You know, that's the one that everyone wants to get their hands on. And that's what, in a way, that's kind of proves that you've made it. But as a fan looking in, to me, that's what it seems to be. So, yeah, I mean, as I say, can't knock your answer there. And then, again, we're kind of going back to the toughest tough moment here, but not really. But in a very different sense, who's the toughest batsman that you ever bowled to in county cricket? I bet there's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's Yunus Khan. Jesus, there is quite a few. Yunus Khan really sticks out to me because he's a top player.
Yeah.
Who else was there? There were so many. There was so many good players. Cookie was a top player, very good player of spin. I mean, obviously, great player all round, but people don't understand that he was a top player of spin. He's, in fact, he's debuting in India, he got 100.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I think because he opened the batting, probably that's why a lot of people remember him more for those, you know, classic cut shots against a new ball.
He was a fantastic late spin.
Yeah.
I would say Chanderpaul, amazing player of spin.
Yeah.
Top player of spin. Other than that, in county cricket, I felt always, I felt John Crawley was a top player of spin as well.
Yeah.
You know, he was really good. You know, then you had guys like Murray Goodwin who were always quite hard because he would cut very well, slightly smaller. You know, he would pick length very, very quickly. You know, he was very, very good. Stephen Fleming, when he was at Notts, he stood out. I'm happy I didn't have to bolt a lot of our guys, Jesus.
What about, is there like a most prized wicket that sticks out in your mind? Like someone who you would like, just like the most pleased ever to get out?
I would say probably in a T20 game, Carl Hooper. Because we were going to lose that game. And Carl being the great man that he is and the great batsman, I felt that kind of shifted the game in our favour. So I would say that is really something which always stands out. Because we were dead and buried at that stage.
Yeah, again, not exactly a bad person to get out. For me, one of the people who really started to innovate the game, the T20 game. So, not a bad person to get out.
Absolutely incredible. And his last, I think, 6-7 years of Test cricket, he averaged 52.
It's outrageous. It really is. Yeah, I mean, you've just reeled off a bunch of names that you could make a seriously good batting lineup with.
Yeah.
You really could.
Oh, really? No, there are some absolute gun players. Ganguly, when he played for North Hants, wasn't a bad player. Especially his spin, left-arm spin. He was bad.
So there
are a few top players in county cricket, you know. Well, there are loads of top players, but you know, these are some of the top guys.
These are the cream of the crop, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. What I thought, really, Bolter.
Yeah, a lot of them as well in terms of test runs. I mean, you mentioned Yunus Khan, 10,099, I believe he got. Then Shiv, of course, one of the top 10 leading run scorers of all time. I mean, true legends of the game here, and I suppose that is a testament to the strength and allure, I suppose, of the county game. And you're just, I was just listening to that and thinking, my goodness, it's like a cricket badger's dream if you got to see those guys play again. It'd be absolutely incredible to see them all in the same 11.
They were unbelievably good. I mean, they were ridiculously good players.
Yeah. You know?
And the main thing with all of them were they were all very calm.
Yeah. I guess that's something that's quite underrated and goes a long way, really.
Well, they're all very, very calm. Yeah. They were all really calm. It's unbelievable. Yeah. They were all very quiet. They're just basically what I realised with all these really great players, batters especially, they just get in their zone. In their bubble, in their sort of zen mode, and that's it. You cannot distract them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like whatever you sledge or something, it kind of, they absorb it to use it against the opposition. You know, it's incredible. It's incredible that when they get into that zone, and you can actually feel it when they hit a ball, and unbelievable. And I would also say Ramps, when I bowled to him when he was at Surrey and I was at Derby. He's a freak. If he was just handled better, I mean, there's no reason he wouldn't have 10,000 test runs and 25, 30 hundreds to his name. Because I've seen him take down the best in not very favourable conditions.
Well, they have it.
I suppose a lot of Surrey fans would probably agree with that as well and concur. But Nyan, just before we go on to, I mean, we do have a comparison here between, obviously, Indian cricket, which you have played for Saurashtra. You also played for RCB and, of course, Rajasthan Royals in the IPL.
Yeah.
But I did just want to bring up something, because this may be, or may not be, common knowledge to some people. But you're actually involved in the first ever bowl out in 2005, which we have spoken about on the podcast before. Again, happened to be against my county of Warwickshire, and Warwickshire lost again. But what were you feeling on that day? Because you unfortunately missed your bowl out attempt, but how crazy of a day was that? What do you actually remember from that crazy game at the Oval.
For the first 20 minutes, there was an argument between our scorer and I think the umpires, because no one knew, because it was the first ever bowl out. So no one knew what was going on. It was a packed stadium, I remember, and we couldn't hear ourselves think because it was crazy. The noise was insane. And suddenly they say, right, the umpires say, you're having a bowl out. And he was like, what? So we picked our, I think five or six it was, and I was one of them, and Warwickshire picked theirs as well. And I think none of the teams knew exactly what was going on. And I think the crowd that day, I remember, they didn't have any idea what was going on. They were like, what the hell is going on here? And then the announcer announced that they're going to have a bowl out. And you could just hear people laughing in the crowd. It was bizarre. But I remember that bowler because I remember Karts, who was a fine bowler. And I remember he bowled it about 6 foot over the stumps. Well, not 6 foot, but about 3 feet over the stumps. And then I can't remember who hit the stumps. And then Azza obviously nailed the Yorker, hit the bottom. And I remember Timmy Murta hitting the final one in the sudden death, and we won. And I remember he just took his shirt off and ran around the whole stadium. And I'll never forget that because it was the first ever bowl out in the world. Yeah, it was crazy, especially in professional sport. It was crazy. It was mad.
Yeah, it's a pretty like quirky piece of history to be involved in, really.
Mm.
It is. You don't see them too often at all, really, anymore. That was, it was obviously that famous one between India and Pakistan. But yeah, it went through a spell of like cropping up on Twitter, like randomly. Yeah. Went through, even when it wasn't like necessarily the anniversary of it, it went through a spell of cropping up on Twitter. And then obviously there would have been one to decide last year's T20 finals day, which maybe would have worked out well for Lanx in the end, but it wasn't to be.
But look, this is the thing, and this is something I also kind of, in a way, feel a little bit, I wouldn't say angry, but in England in county cricket, there's so many things what has happened and people don't know. Of course, India being the powerhouse and kudos and amazing and great. But I feel the world also needs to be educated by some players. And I always say Alistair Brown because people talk about double hundreds, right? Yeah. That guy got a double hundred, I think it was 17 years ago, 18 years ago. In 2003, I think. Brownie got it.
Yeah, setting the pace.
2000. So, I mean, does that show that someone is way above the time?
Yeah, almost born in the wrong era or playing in the wrong era.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm trying to say. I mean, it's absolutely unreal. You know, I remember my first ever T20 game against Sussex. We got 220 something. So, runs were being scored. We were smacking the ball about at Surrey all the time. You know, yeah. There's a few times we failed, but that Surrey team, I'm saying to everyone, it would take on any IPL franchise. It would.
Would have been interesting. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't happen. Wouldn't be able to happen now. It's not feasible, but it would have been interesting to see that Surrey team against, let's say, the Mumbai Indians, who obviously won the IPL. That would have been interesting to see.
Remember the Mumbai Indians also have four overseas players. So suddenly if we were allowed four overseas, you know, but if each team was allowed, yeah, exactly. But if each team was allowed two overseas players, we would give them a real run for their money. Because if anyone asked me what's the best, I mean, for me, we were the catalysts and the aggressors in the T20 game. You know, Leicester was tactical and everything and whatever, great. But we were also tactical, but I mean, no one wanted to play us. So,
no.
You know, that was, you know, and people need to know this in world cricket, that it's, yes, IPL is amazing. There's no doubt, you know, but the T20 Cup started it all and gave everyone the foundation to do everything. And the runs and the things they're talking about, yeah, we used to do it. We used to get 230, 240 sometimes. We used to get 160, 170, 180 on a regular basis. There were guys, you know, there was Mal Loy who used to sit down on one knee and you know, sweep the kicks. You know, there were people who used to do all these things. There was Andrew Symons as the overseas who used to go crazy. There was, there was a lot of top players who used to do a lot of crazy things then.
Yeah.
But because it was not streamed in India in that sense, it did not become huge. The reason why even an average player who is very good gets a lot of hype if he has two good innings in the IPL because just of the cricket fan base.
Yeah.
And we've done it in England for a long time, but people just don't know. And that's the thing. And in some ways there needs to be a little bit of justice towards it. Like, mate, you know, we've done this before. It's not new. It's happened.
Well, Gensen, it's a very interesting point.
And yeah, that's why we got you onto the podcast, Dian, of course, to tell these stories, I suppose, and to almost shine a light on these.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there are guys in both eras. I mean, you know, they talk about fielding. Well, have I ever seen a better fielder than Ricky Ponting and Andrew Simons? No. Paul Collingwood? No. Ricky Clark? No. I'm not, you know, Ricky Clark, Andrew Simons, Paul Collingwood and Ricky Ponting are the best fielders I've ever seen because they're freaks. They could field anywhere. A lot of these guys are great fielders, don't get me wrong, but these guys could literally field everywhere. Like Ricky Clark, he was the best fielder I've ever played with. He's fielded at me for silly point, short leg. He's taken ridiculous slip catches, or he can field out in the deep. And the guy's 6'5".
But not exactly your average short leg kind of fielder, is he?
No, but he's a
spinner
freak.
At least.
Yeah, but he could field anywhere.
Yeah.
Absolute freak.
Yeah.
Best pair of hands I've ever seen. But again, because a lot of his stuff is not shown in India, people don't know. You know. So there are a lot of things which have been done, which I would say the fast bowlers have improved. That's what I would say in their fielding. But the top fielders are still as good as what they were in, you know, and that's it.
Fair enough. And Nayan, we have spoken there about India, and of course with the IPL, Lalit Modi's creation in 2008, which really sparked the T20 revolution, you could argue, in terms of becoming a real global, renowned format, I suppose.
But of course.
The IPL, you did play, of course, you played for the team that I support, which is the Royal Challengers Bangalore. You also played for the Rajasthan Royals. How did that compare to the T20 Cup, as it was known back then? Was there a massive, I don't know, gap in standard, or was it pretty similar,
in your opinion? Look, I don't think there's a massive gap in standard. I think the pitches, the size of the boundaries, I think your overall conditions, when it's nice and hot, like it is in India at that time, the ball doesn't really move around. You know, sometimes we play T20 cricket in the UK and it can be 18 degrees, 17 degrees and not very pleasant summer weather sometimes. You know, so the weather does, you know, affect a lot of things. In terms of toe-to-toe, I think what separates is a little bit is because you can have four overseas. I would say the domestic guys are neck and neck. Even the top two overseas are neck and neck. But in India, you can have four overseas and an 11 in the IPL. So I think that's the difference.
Yeah. Do you think that has a negative? Sorry, I was going to say, do you think that has a negative effect on still today on India's T20 side, because that's four less local players? Well, two less local players that can play. Do you think that has an effect at all, or is that not something you really noticed?
I haven't really noticed that, because the cricket is so big there that, you know, they have enough good players, top players, to do things and to fill gaps and to replace players, you know, but. That's literally all I would say.
Yeah.
You know, like, is just that. And of course it's given a lot more press, because it's literally, I think it's in the top three sporting events in the whole world.
Yeah.
It's absolutely massive. It's like among the top four or three, or maybe I think it's even one now, sort of sporting brand in the world. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but again, that is, you know, an economic thing. That's monetary. At the end of the day, you know, if in England we made it like the 100, but like the T20 stuff on a bigger scale, regarding getting big owners in and saying, right, we're going to have a 8-week tournament here or 6-week tournament, I reckon it would come pretty close, because you'd get a lot of the same owners probably buying the teams here.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what I just think is the main separator.
Another Knight Riders team, perhaps.
So, that would be good.
Yeah. Again, an interesting viewpoint on it. I think, obviously, a lot of the IPL, I don't think this is an unfair comment, the IPL is quite a dominant factor in world cricket right now.
It's huge.
And, yeah.
It is the factor in that sense, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, obviously, I mean, you're someone who's been there and done that for in both England and in India, in the IPL and in the T20 over here. And I guess, obviously, you're one of the people in, you know, in the world who can comment on that, really, and on that position. So, yeah, I guess that's quite an interesting, again, an interesting viewpoint on it, almost an alternative viewpoint on it.
Well, yeah, look, I think that's just the way I see it. And,
without a doubt.
You know, and I think it's something which is here to stay. I just think franchise cricket just needs to be, I think it's a very important thing. And to be honest, it's giving players their livelihood. It's giving, you know, professionals who have worked very hard, you know, shows like, you know, in that sense, if you're very good at cricket, you're on par with football now.
Yeah.
You know, because people always, oh, Premier League players. Yeah, okay, how many Premier League players are there? And the fact is now, if you're also a top cricketer, like a Premier League footballer, you will make a very, very handsome
living. A lot of money, yeah.
And it's also fair enough, good. I'm really happy for the guys who are doing that because they deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess you have to show you the one of the top players to be able to get there, don't you? And you have to work hard to get there. So,
but that's like in anything in life, really. It's life. It's not.
Yeah,
it's
without
sport.
Doubt.
It's life, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to be the top at anything, it takes sacrifice and takes a lot of hard work. And at the end of the day, you do reap the rewards for it.
Yeah, some very, very sound advice. And of course, for me, obviously as a huge county cricket fan and someone who has been watching the IPL since its inception in 2008, it was just interesting to kind of understand your perspective on that, really, Nyan. And of course, as an RCB fan, helps that you did play for the correct franchise in the Indian Premier League.
Thank you.
But we've mentioned there about, obviously, T20, and you mentioned that the standard was actually relatively similar, of course, in your days. But nowadays in county cricket, and will of course include the county championship as well, Red Bull cricket, which areas of the modern county game do you think could really improve? Which, I don't know, almost aspects do you think could be improved upon to take England to the next level per se?
I think spin. To be honest, again, I think technically, I think we really need to improve in England, even with our batting, with a lot of things. I think an overall technical ability. I know we're, yes, let them play the way they want, but there's certain basics which I feel have to improve, you know. And I feel our spin bowling techniques are not correct. You know, I feel a lot of the bowlers are very chest on. If you slow motion Dom Best bowl, when his front foot is down, his front arm is totally dropped and he's basically totally chest on bowling. You know, a lot of the time his seam position is not right. There's a lot of things. I know England have spin bowling coaches and everything, but I don't know who's looking at what, but this is just from what I've been observing because I am doing a lot of one-to-one coaching and a lot of things right now myself. But I do feel we need to technically improve in a lot of things. I would say technically is the thing. Even some of our batters, I know they get a lot of runs in domestic cricket, but, you know, you look at Rory Burns, who's, you know, done well for Surrey and everything and, you know, good left-hander. But if you look at his bat, and I know it's worked for him, but his bat comes back behind leg stump. So it's kind of got to swing itself round again to play a shot straight. You know, how successful is he really going to be for a long time at the international level? I don't know. You know, so I think technically we do have to improve in certain things and be a little bit, I wouldn't say traditional, but there's certain basics which don't ever change in the game. You know, again, I'm going to get a lot of criticism for this, but I've just said what I've had to say.
No, of course, Nyan, there's no need to be apologetic. It's your opinion at the end of the day. It's the world of cricket. Yeah. It's the world of sports. Everybody has their own different views, and that's what makes, well, podcasts like this so interesting, I suppose, to understand all of these different viewpoints. Just one thing I wanted to touch upon there, and it is with regards to batting, and this is something which has been spoken about in county cricket for a number of years now, and that is the quality of pitches. Now, I just wanted to take it back to your debut season, 2004, when, of course, Warwickshire won the county championship. I think three or four of us...
Yeah. That's convenient, isn't it? Taking it back to that year.
Yeah, exactly. Take it back to that year.
But no, there was a real reason why. Of course, Ian Bell scored, I believe, 1,498 runs. And then at the same time, we also had about three or four other batsmen scoring well over 1,000. And then you compare that to 2018, 2019, where we've got a few. Yeah. I've just mentioned there Ian Bell getting 1,498. The leading run score in 2019 was Dom Sibley with 1,244. Do you think that that's an area that English cricket could improve upon with regards to the quality of pitches? And if so, how do you think we could almost implement those changes?
Well, look, is it the pitches or is it that Duke's ball which does not stop swinging sometimes?
Yeah, it's a
difficult one because I think the pitches are fine because actually our pitches are fantastic because you go up to length, so you've got to learn how to play spin. Oval, if it's slightly cloudy, it's going to swing around corners. Otherwise, it's an amazing shirt front batting pitch. Taunton has become a Bunsen before it was a shirt front pitch. You know, Gloucester nibbles about sometimes. It's quite slow, keeps low. Worcester can seam a lot. Old Trafford also can be extremely quick. Yep. Hard deck. Quickest deck in England.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Brazen surface. So, Durham, good hard pitch. Nips around. Sophia Gardens, Cardiff can spin and seam. You know, Edgbaston, dry, but a good batting surface, can spin. So I think the pitches are great.
A lot of variation there. I mean, you've just gone through
That's 10, what you want.
10 grounds? Exactly, yeah.
That's what you want. I don't think it's generally the pitches. I mean, look, I mean, and this is why I remember speaking to my dad. He was like, you know what? We actually never discussed the pitches so much. It was just understood that when you go somewhere, like you go to Yorkshire to play, you know what to expect. You go to Warwickshire to play, you know what to expect. You go to Notts, you know what to expect. You know what to expect. So I don't, he said, I don't understand why there's so much talk on pitches. It's not like it's changed. It's not like, oh, right, I've arrived at Notts and they're playing four spinners. You know, he just said there's too much talk on it. You know, and I kind of agreed with him. I said, actually, you know what? That's right. There is a lot of talk and pitches, you know, but batting techniques, ball swinging around. I mean, you know, the Duke's ball doesn't stop swinging. Should we introduce Kookaburra balls to get spinners also more involved in the game? I remember sometimes not bowling till June. Like I would bowl here and there, but I've been through 4 or 5 championship games. I've been in the 11 and I think would have bowled about 5 overs.
Yeah. Which I also think why spinning around is a quite, you know, coming to fruition a lot more, certainly in county cricket nowadays. You know, you think, I mean, lengths have like a bunch. Lengths have like 4 or 5. So that's off the top of my head, like that's one example. Yeah. You know, you can get away with not playing this, but it's like, look at England. They could get away in April they never played test in April, but if they were to, they could get away with not playing a spinner, and Joe Root could bowl the majority of overs without a doubt because he wouldn't really need to bowl that many.
Yeah, he could bowl 10-12 overs, no issue.
Exactly.
Done.
Exactly.
You know, set a field out and go at 2.5s, 3s, and finished. He's done a great job.
Exactly. So it is quite interesting. It really is.
I think the ball is maybe, you know, maybe do you have the Kookaburra ball? Does that help? You know, or to be honest, does anything really need to be changed? Those who are the top guys will always do well anyways.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's also too much discussion. And on pitches, I just think everyone is sometimes blaming pitches for results when I feel sometimes the cricketers have to look at themselves.
Yeah. And I guess that's one of the beauties of, I mean, you mentioned there maybe switching out to a Kookaburra ball. I guess one of the beauties of cricket as a sport, I mentioned this the other day on another podcast, is the differences around the world. You know, you go to India or the subcontinent, you won't get anywhere like the subcontinent if you played in Australia, generally, you wouldn't, unless it's a freak yeah. pitch. That would not happen. It's just like in Australia, you wouldn't get anywhere like that in England, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
obviously sometimes some surfaces are comparable and stuff like that. But generally, I guess that's one of the good things. And you would, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting debate. It really is.
I think we're very lucky in England that we've got a lot of variety in pitches.
Yeah.
I think we're actually very lucky.
Yeah.
Because we can adapt and prepare and you know, and do.
Maybe that's why this World Cup was so, you know, or I said this World Cup, the last World Cup in 2019, it's 2021 now. We need to stop living in that year, don't we? But yeah, I guess that's one of the reasons why that World Cup was so entertaining and so good is that
every
ground
offered.
It was
the best World Cup because of the conditions, because all the games were interesting. It was a proper competition. It was, you're good, you're going to score runs. You're good, you're going to take some wickets.
Yeah, it's a very interesting debate, really is.
Yeah. Realistically, it warrants its own podcast in itself. I mean, you could talk about it for hours. The only thing that I will say about that nine, which is interesting, mm-hmm. would you be in favour of introducing the Kookaburra? Because I personally wouldn't, but I'd like to know your views on that.
I mean, to be honest, I don't see any reason why it can't be. I think that the Duke's ball I love bowling with it. It's a great seam. It's a big, good seam, and you can really wrap your fingers around it. And it's a lot better than the Kookaburra, the seam, regardless for spin or seam. But, you know, it hoops around corners, you know. So I was just thinking, I think it's worth a try. I think it's worth a try.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, personally, I think all countries should play with the same cricket ball. India play with an SG, we play with the Dukes, everyone else plays with the Kookaburra.
But then again, look at somewhere like New Zealand, right? They use Kookaburra, and you'll probably compare England and New Zealand conditions similar in terms of like overcast generally. Yeah. Pretty overcast in England, isn't it? So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. I guess that takes me back to my point as well of everywhere's unique. Mm. I know, as I say, you can compare some places, but again, you can argue that with a ball, you know, in the subcontinent, they use a different type of ball to what we use here in England. England are now going to have to play in Sri Lanka. They don't use the Duke's ball in Sri Lanka. No. You know? So that's, again, that's unique. It's just like in football, they use the same football they do in Spain as they do in England.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I think should happen. Yes, yeah. But I think it should be universal.
Yeah.
I think there should be a standard ball which we all use. I don't think India or England should have an SG ball or a Duke's ball and everyone else uses Kookaburra. I just think it should be a standard thing.
Yeah. I mean, again, as I say, it's very interesting and it's something we could debate for a while.
Yeah. No, of course, because both arguments are very valid.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah, they are.
You know, both arguments are really, really valid. Yeah. So it's like you said, it can just go on for ages.
Exactly. Yeah. It would. I mean, I'm not going to. I mean, I would try and fight the Duke's corner until the end of time, if possible. But unfortunately, this isn't the podcast to do that. But Nyan, that does bring us to almost the conclusion of us talking about your career. So before we end today's podcast, we do, of course, have our quickfire questions. Now, these are completely random. Okay, they're not like the normal teammate segment that we have on today's podcast. So, Nyan, are you ready to answer these quickfire questions that we prepared?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
So, the first question of our quickfire questions then, Nyan, Test or T20?
Both have different audiences and both are good for cricket. I really can't choose between one, if I'm honest. And I'm being very honest. it's just simply because T20 is attracting a lot of new cricket fans who are then getting into Test cricket, you know. And Test cricket, I love it. Purist, amazing. The last Test match, wow, incredible, unbelievable, you know. So there's so many great Tests as well. But if I'm thinking about getting people into cricket, I would say T20 gets people into it and then they come into Test cricket and they start liking it. But if it's just Test cricket, people are not going to get into cricket because the same old thing for the people who don't understand it, 5 days. I haven't got patience to watch a game 5 days. But if they watch it like a football game, and then they go, oh, you know, the longer version of the game, I wonder how that is, because then they're understanding stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
That's why I always find it's a really difficult question. Is it? Do I have to pick one?
No, I don't think we do, because both are fantastic formats, and it's interesting just saying that pathway. That was actually mine, as I said. Started off watching T20 cricket, and then found a love for Test cricket the year after, and have been an absolute mad Test fanatic ever since.
Yeah,
but that's what I'm saying. That's the thing. Because if you love T20, you're going to end up loving Test cricket, because you're going to love cricket. And that's what I'm trying to tell people.
Yeah. Again, you know,
but like my son, he's 11. He's going to be 12. He started watching T20 cricket at the age of 9. And now he loves Test cricket because he now is understanding things. It's exciting. And now he's seeing the other version. So he's loving it.
Yeah.
But he didn't like Test cricket when he was younger. Because he was like, Daddy, it's very slow. But now he's like, oh, this was exciting, because he's used to the game. And I think the main thing is introducing people to the game. And I think T20 is the best ambassador. And then, being the purist, everyone will love Test cricket.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting debate. So you had to say one, what would you pick?
Okay, fine. I'll have to go with Test cricket.
Fair enough.
Just because of me, but as an advert to the game, I'd say T20 to get people into Test cricket.
Fair enough. Okay, the next one is related to one of your old teammates. Is Mark Ramprakash better at batting or better at dancing?
He's very good at both, but batting. Rambi's a great dancer, but, you know, 111 or 12 centuries, first class.
Yeah, good choice there, Nyan. Next one, very much spin related. Off spinner or carom ball?
Off-spinner.
Nice.
Fair enough. The next one, this time batting-related, cover drive or a reverse sweep?
Cover drive.
Traditional.
Nice.
Like it.
Next one, IPL or T20 Blast?
Oh, God, you guys. It's very tough. T20 Blast, purely because of the love, because it's our domestic competition, and it started off everything. The T20 Cup started off this whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I would choose that, and I would say first, and then I would say the IPL is a great brand ambassador worldwide for cricket, because it brings in the large audiences and it glorifies cricket and it makes it more famous, which is what we all want as cricketers and cricket lovers. Is that a fair enough answer?
It is indeed.
Isn't it? The next one, again, very much a bowling related one. Hat-trick or a fifer?
Fifer.
Yeah, fair enough.
Gotta be a fifer, isn't it? I mean, five is five.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair enough.
And you get to present the ball at the end as well,
yeah.
I suppose.
Exactly. Walk off, lead the team off.
You can lift it up. Exactly. Lift up the ball.
Yeah, good choice. Also, I suppose two more wickets in that. The next question, Nyan.
Yes.
This is a difficult one for you. Because it's between two of your cricketing idols, Sir Vivian Richards or Sir Garfield Sobers.
Sir Garfield Sobers.
Okay. Straight in with the answer.
Yeah, fair not enough. Too difficult then.
No.
Fair enough. The next one, not a cricket related one at all.
Okay.
KFC or Burger King?
KFC, yes. But I do love the Burger King onion rings.
Fair enough.
If you haven't tried them, please try them. But KFC.
Solid shout there. Next question, this is an interesting one.
Yes.
Super over or bowl out?
Super over. Exciting, you know, six balls, batsman is there trying to smack it, you know, and we've seen some great super overs over the last few years.
We sure have, yep.
Especially what about super over once, or super over more than once if it's a tie, or super over once and then boundary count?
No, super over and then super over again.
The more super overs, the merrier.
Yeah, basically. I think it's just fun, and I think it's fair. You know, I do think it's fair. I think the boundary count thing is like, well, what about if it rained before and it dried up and 4 hours later and other teams batting? I don't know. But I think there and then, if two teams have tied, that means they've been even. So yeah. I think you just keep going with the super over.
And
I
keep going and going and going. Way.
Yeah. And what entertainment. It's amazing.
Yeah. It is indeed. And the final one then, again, not a cricket one, bit of an out there one, sure. To be honest. Half your height or double your weight, which would you rather be?
Oh, God. I would have to say double my weight because, you know, being half my height, I mean, it's like, yeah, I'd be shorter than a five-year-old. So, yeah.
All right, fair enough.
I think fair enough. Double your weight. I'll have to work it off. You can always work off the weight, can't you?
Fair enough.
Yep, fair enough there, Nyan. So yeah, that does bring us to an end to today's quickfire question segment, and it does of course bring us to a conclusion to today's podcast with Nyan Doshi. So Nyan, before we leave today, do you have anything to kind of plug or promote, any final things to say before we end today's podcast?
No, just thank you so much to both of you. I think it's been really nice and really interesting, actually, and really sort of insightful questions which were also quite close to my heart, which a lot of people didn't ask. They just asked the usual stuff, and you know, I was it's really good and insightful, and it's really lovely to be around two cricket lovers and guys who obviously clearly have very good knowledge of the sport and understand it deeply. I think it's a really refreshing thing, and I think you guys are a great, you know, advocate for people to get into the game.
Thanks
for that. And just want to send a message that I'm wanting to start playing pro cricket again. I've been training hard. I played in a couple of leagues this year, you know, in Middlesex for my club Bronsbury. And I want to see at the young age of 42 if I can make my comeback in T20 cricket. So let's see what happens. Maybe something exciting over the next 6 months will appear and I can be back playing pro T20 cricket. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
That would be interesting. I mean, well, to be fair, you say 42, Praveen Tambe, if anyone knows him, 48, he's still playing franchise cricket in the Caribbean. Well, and India, I suppose. But yeah. Nyan, all I just want to say, of course, those were some lovely words. We do feel quite flattered by those. And of course, we just want to say a massive, massive thank you for coming onto the podcast.
No, and thank you so much, and love to do it again whenever you guys can. I've really, really enjoyed it.
We would love to have you back on.
Yeah, the feeling's very much mutual there, Nyan.
Yeah.
And of course, with your venture into T20 cricket again, we'll be keeping a close eye on that, and we wish you the very, very best of luck with that.
Fantastic, yes, indeed.
Yes. That does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you as always for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.